possible theory. And but before we get to that, I realize that the example of this deformation leading of a sigma model obtained in this way was a little bit complicated last time, so I'd like to explain a slightly easier example. So we'll consider two free beta gamma systems. Sorry, a free beta gamma system plus the convex conjugate. So last time we wrote the fields as beta I and sigma I, but today we'll write them as beta and gamma, because that's the standard way of doing it. Del W, where I runs from 1 to 2. And so that beta and gamma are in the fundamental representation of the group SU2. So we have our three polymatrices. And we can calculate the currents, the chiral and anti-chiral currents for these three matrices. So it's very easy to do this. So J1 is I of beta 1 gamma 1 minus beta 2 gamma 2. J bar 1, well, because there's a complex conjugation, there's a minus sign, right, because of the I. J2 is I of beta 1 gamma 2 plus beta 2 gamma 1. J bar 2 is minus I of beta bar 1 gamma bar 2 plus beta bar 1 gamma bar 2. J3 is beta 1 gamma 2 minus beta 2 gamma 1. J bar 3 is bar 1 gamma bar 2 minus bar 2 gamma bar 1. Okay, so I hope this. So I haven't done anything, I've just written down the currents, and you. It's kind of a trivial observation is that the currents are, you know, you can just read them off the matrix entries because these fields live in the fundamental representation. So I hope that's clear. So the reason, you know, there's many different ways to write a basis for SU2, but the nice thing about the polymatrices is that it's an orthonormal basis, or orthogonal basis. There's an invariant inner product on the Lie algebra. And under this inner product, the inner product between sigma I and sigma j is like 2 delta ij. So this allows us to raise and lower Lie algebra SU2 indices. So we're interested in jj bar. So what's that? That's, and expanding it out, is the sum over an SU2 index A of ja, j bar A. So of course, that's one. J1 bar plus J2 bar plus J3 bar. And if you sit down and calculate it, you'll find that this is sorry. takes this form. So this is just some trivial manipulation. In principle, there are some cross terms, but they cancel. And this is what we find. OK, so what does this tell us? Suppose we take this Lagrangian for the free beta gamma system, and we add on this quartic interaction. Well, we saw last time that we can interpret this as a two-dimensional signal model with a metric, where the metric is determined by the form of this chiral antichiral interaction. So beta gamma plus beta bar gamma bar system with J bar deformation is the two-dimensional sigma model on the manifold C2. This is the target of the sigma model with metric of the form Gij dui du bar j, where u1 and u2 are holomorphic coordinates on C2. Well, what's this metric where if g lower ij satisfies, is the inverse metric, gij gik, so delta jk, then g lower ij is something that can just be read off this formula. The way it works is the gammas correspond to u's, and the betas correspond to the ij indices. So this is going to be delta ij u1 bar plus u2 bar. So all I'm doing is just going over what we did last time. Last time we saw we took the sigma model Lagrangian and we rewrote it so that it had a term which was quadratic in betas. That corresponded to the G lower ij. And each term quadratic in the betas was accompanied by some expression in the gammas. So what we found last time was that the inverse metric could be read off this interaction.
So what was u again? Is the complex coordinates?
You are the complex coordinates on C2. So this tells us that the actual metric, you know, it's easy to invert the matrix. The metric is G1 over U1 squared plus U2 squared. So we've inverted it, which was easy to do because it was just some constant, some function times delta ij. So we just divide by that function. And if we can rewrite this in real coordinates, if u1 is x1 plus ix2, u2 is x2 plus x3 plus ix4, then what we find here is 1 over the radius squared times the flat metric. So So any questions about this analysis so far? You know, we could have gotten here by thinking about the symmetries right at the beginning. The whole construction is invariant under the group SU2. So whatever we're going to find is going to be some metric on four-dimensional space, possibly with the singularity of the origin, which is invariant under the group SU2. There really aren't very many of those. You know, once we remove the origin, our space looks like the three-sphere times a line. So the only SU2 invariant metric on the three-sphere is the usual one. And the only thing we kind of have to be concerned about is how this depends on the radius. So we're finding it just depends on the radius in a very simple way.
The target space is a three-sphere.
This metric is equivalent to the metric on the three-sphere times the line.
Okay, so it's four-dimensional.
It's four-dimensional, but like an interesting curved geometry times a kind of trivial flat geometry. So, R4, the origin removed, with this metric. The metric is G looks like the metric on the three-sphere plus the R squared over R squared. So if, say, S is log R, it looks like the metric on the three-sphere plus d S squared. So R4 minus the origin with this metric is equivalent to the product of the three-sphere with this ordinary metric times R. You guys have probably seen something very like this if you've ever studied holography. You know, you analyze the near horizon limit of the metric in the presence of a black hole, and it is this map. I mean, it's basically this, except with some slightly different factors. Okay, so the conclusion, is that the sigma model on S3 times a free theory, single free scalar, which is not kind of trivial, is of the form chiral times anti-chiral plus JJ bar, and is therefore integral. So I'll explain this point in just a minute. So that this kind of argument will produce for you lots of sigma models with particular metrics, which by some general argument are integral models, have a lax matrix, satisfying the zero curvature equations, you know, transfer matrix, Mondrami matrix, and all this package. Now, I should admit that if you look in the literature for formulas for the lax matrix for the sigma model on the sphere or something like this, this is not how they derive it. They just kind of write it down. I don't quite understand why the formulas people write down in the literature lead to integral models. It's not. There are some calculations people do to show the Lax equations are satisfied, and I don't quite have a good feeling for why they're true. So I'm personally the only models where I can really understand, without having to think about it, why they're integrable, are the ones of this form. So that's why I wanted to present it in this way. So why are these models integrable? So consider a chiral, any chiral, and any anti-chiral theory. With an action of some G, which is say a simple layout, a simple group. And we take a basis of the Lie algebra and FABC, the structure constants. Also on TATB is delta AB. So the argument I'm going to give is super general, and will produce for your Lax matrix. So there's some points at which the argument is a little abstract, and we can assume our models are given by beta gamma systems. So recall, JA appears as the coefficient of a background gauge field. This is the definition of the current. When I turn on a background gauge field, I'll find I'm perturbing my Lagrangian by some operator, which is the background gauge field times the current. Now, before we do any perturbation, in a chiral theory, everything is holomorphic. So suppose in a chiral theory, for example, a beta gamma system, one with Lagrangian integral beta I d bar d w bar gamma I, the fundamental fields satisfy del w bar beta 0, del w bar gamma I equals 0. They're independent of w bar, so the equations of motion force this condition. So any operator O satisfies this equation too, because the operator will be some built for some product of these fields. And this is the definition of chiral, really. Every operator is killed by dw bar. Now, what happens if I perturb my theory? If we turn on a background gauge field, A W bar What happens, of course, is that this equation is satisfied where this derivative is replaced by covariant derivative. Plus where rho A is, it means the transformations of an operator under the G action. Right, so I have a theory with some symmetry, and I have an operator. I can transform the operator in an infinitesimal amount by infinitesimal symmetry to produce a new operator. I'm denoting that new operator rho A, rho sub A of O, where A is the Lie algebra index indicating which symmetry I'm applying. So this simple equation tells us in the chiral plus anti-chiral plus J A J bar A theory, any operator O, which is built from the chiral fields, satisfies del W bar O plus J bar A rho A O equals 0. So the point is, we look at this J A J bar A. Well, J A is a thing that accompanies a background gauge field. So from the point of view of the chiral theory, this deformation means we have a background gauge field J bar. From the chiral point of view, the J A J bar A deformation means that we have a background gauge field A A W bar, which is J bar A. Now, of course, if you wrote everything out explicitly and calculated the equations of motion by varying some chiral fields, you would find this equation. But I kind of enjoy the slightly more abstract approach that will lead us to this equation without any work. Okay, so similarly, just by applying the same argument to the anti-chiral fields, so if O bar is an operator built from clip on this thing broke.
I'll bring one down.
I think we can probably figure it here. There's a little bit of a thingy here. So basically. Okay. It's a bit longer, so you can put a little bit. Thank you. Okay, so if you have an operator built from the anti-chiral fields, then del W O bar plus J A rho bar A O bar is equal to zero, where these are the transformations in the anti-chiral fields. Okay, so we want to apply these equations not just to any operators, but to J and J bar themselves. We're good, I think, or was it?
Oh, you didn't need a clip?
I thought it broke, but Tibra fixed it.
Oh, okay.
So we want to apply these equations to J and J bar, and then we will see that these will lead to the Lax equations. So applying this to O equals JA, O bar equals J bar A, we find, well, del W bar JA plus J bar B. Well, how does JA transform under the action of the symmetries? Because it's a current, it transforms in the adjoint representation. So rho B of JA is F, depending on your conventions, CBA JC. And similarly, so this is equal to zero. Okay. So these equations, we've just derived them from. We would just derive them starting with the fact that a current is the coefficient of a background gauge field, and from the equations of motion in the presence of a background gauge field. So these are kind of very, very universally true. Okay. So from these equations, we're going to be able to see pretty easily the Lax pair equations. So what's the Lax matrix? So the claim is that if I set L Z A W is 1 over Z J A, L Z A W bar 1 over 1 minus Z J bar A, the claim is that these guys satisfy the Lax equations, which, just to remind you, are del W bar L D A W bar plus del W, sorry, minus A, sorry, distributed W. W A W bar del, minus del W bar A W plus F A B C L Z B W C W bar equals zero. Possibly missing a factor of 2. So let's just do this calculation. We're going to be interested in, firstly, del W L W bar. So we need to show so 1/1 - z times del W J bar A minus 1/(z) del W bar J A plus F A B C 1/(z) 1/(1 - z) J bar B J C equals 0. So now we can see we have a hope of doing this, because we can replace every occurrence of a derivative of J. We can use these equations to replace a derivative of J by something involving JJ bar. So then we'll find a linear combination of three functions, of three expressions involving JJ bar. And that has a hope of being 0. And if the signs are correct, it will be 0. So we replace del W J bar A gets replaced by F A B C F A B C So there's a non-zero chance I'm going to miss a sign in this calculation. So if we insert these in, we'll find this is a minus sign. No, it's looking pretty good. 1/(1 - z) plus 1/(z) plus 1/(z) 1/(1 - z) times F A B C J bar B J C. And is this 0? No, I'm sign wrong. This was a minus sign, it would be 0.
It is a minus.
Was it? You think that should have been minus? Yeah.
If you put a plus in front of the first one, then the thing carrying the bar is the second one.
So I have to flip these.
Yeah.
So I get minus that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. So I find this kind of fun. So we see here, any theory to a JJ bar deformation, it's always going to be integrable. The whole package we've discussed will hold, it will have this Yangian symmetry, it will have infinitely many computing Hamiltonians, so on and so forth. Let's see. Interesting to figure out what to do next. So any questions on this calculation? Okay, so this at one stage early on, I had to do this calculation with to show that any time you have a solution of the classical Young-Baxter equation, you'll find an integral model. Yes?
Sorry, probably a random question. The geometry of this, is this a complex manifold? And also, probably it's a Kähler manifold, and also is the integrability related to that fact?
Well, let's see. So in the approach we're taking to seeing integrability, we're only going to find metrics that are somehow related to Kähler manifolds. Because that's the only case we can hope to find a deformation of chiral times anti-chiral. However, this approach is not the standard approach, and other, you know, like for example, in this approach we could see why is the sigma model on the 2n minus 1 dimensional sphere integrable? Because the 2n is the unit sphere in C to the n, and this kind of argument would work. But it wouldn't give you any insight into why the sigma model on, say, the 4 sphere is integrable, because that's not related in an easy way to a complex manifold. So a more standard way of approaching this integrability story would not use the Kähler property at all. So the model, there are models which are integrable and which I do not know how to see from this method. Yeah.
Can one understand the Eisenberg magnetic field from this method?
Which is that?
Can one understand the Eisenberg magnetic field?
The Eisenberg model with the background magnetic field?
Yeah.
Oh, I think we should ask Dunja.
No.
Didn't you tell me this is a famous unsolved problem in?
Eisenberg model, what? XXX spin chain in the external transverse magnetic field. It's known to be non-integrable.
Okay.
Recently, very recently shown, like a week ago.
Okay. So maybe this answers your question, right?
But happened a week ago.
To the Eisenberg magnetic field, it's integrable, right? The E88 by Jean-Marc
Lacour. Awesome. I mean, I'm gonna say I don't know as well as I should. Like the relationship between X. Between the various spin chains in the Eisenberg model. I know there's some specialization of the parameter. In Baxter's book, he discusses how to see the six vertex model in certain external magnetic fields. And this may answer your question. Actually, that is super closely related to the other solutions of the Young-Baxter equations, which break the SU2 symmetry. That may be. I'll use that as an excuse to say what I wanted to say next. More generally, I mean, people who've looked at integral systems might know that there's, you know, the XXX spin chain, which is related to sigma models on the round sphere, and is related to the special case of the six vertex model we discussed at the beginning. But there's also the XXZ spin chain and the XYZ spin chain. So it turns out that those are related to sigma models on kind of slightly deformed spheres, because these models do not have SU2 symmetry anymore. The SU2 symmetry is broken. So I want to explain a deformation of this story, where instead of just having JA, J bar A, we accompany this by a certain tensor in the Lie algebra, tensor of the Lie algebra. So more generally, suppose we have some or a b of z, which is in the Lie algebra, tensor of the Lie algebra. So it has two Lie algebra indices, which satisfies. So the first equation is a very simple one, or a b of z. Is or EA minus Z. And secondly, an equation called the classical Young-Vastor equation. Which is that for a b z1 minus z2 or c d z2 minus z3 f b c e plus cyclic permutations is equal to 0. Okay. In the case the Lie algebra was the group of, was the Lie algebra of n by n matrices. In one of the tutorials, we derived this equation from the quantum Young-Vastor equation to leading order and some perturbation theory around the trivial solution. And we saw something about how this is related to integrability. So if this holds, then we can define a field theory by deforming chiral times anti-chiral by, instead of J bar B or a B, write it like this. We take two fixed values of this spectral parameter and we take their difference. We use or a B at this value to add on a term in the Lagrangian, which deforms it. So let me write down. Oh yes. So then the statement is that this still is integrable. Is integrable so the Lax matrix is so the W component is JB or BA C minus C zero. I think this is true. This is the statement. So the idea so the equations of motion will say that dw bar ja is going to be written in terms of something involving j bar. And or. I'm going to write it very, very, very heuristically. And also L A W L B W bar F A B C. This involves OR times OR. So the equations for the Lax matrix, the Lax equations, will give you an equation quadratic in OR And this equation will just be exactly the classical Young-Baxter equation. This computation is not hard. I've kind of done it before. It's just a bit too tedious to write out right now. And it's really about along the same lines we had before. So the last 5 minutes, I just want to write down so we've already seen the most trivial solutions of the classical Young-Baxter equation, like at least simplicity. I'll write down some other solutions. First one is 4AB is delta AB over Z. This is what we've used. This is the one we've been using so far. So for instance, the beta gamma plus beta bar gamma bar plus JJ bar deformation in this case will give you a round metric on S2 or S3, depending on which system we start with. We saw last time how to see S2. The second case, this is the trigonometric version. If we take the basis, so this one turns out to be kind of annoying to write in the basis of polymatrices. So we write it in the basis of these matrices. Then R of Z is E tensor F over 1 minus E U minus F tensor E, 1 minus E to the minus U, plus 1 over 4, 1 minus E V. Something like this. So actually, don't write this down yet. I just want to look at my notes to make sure I get the factors correct. I wrote it in terms of U. Okay, so you notice this is called trigonometric because if U was imaginary, you could write this in terms of sine and cos, or you could write it in terms of sinh and cosh if you wanted to. So this is a fun one. So if we start with the beta gamma system on the line is at RCP1, the scalar manifold, which is acted on by SU2. Well, previously we found the sigma model on the round 2-sphere. A sigma model on a funny washed S2, which looks a bit like a sausage.
It's the space of the claims, the complex.
Looks like this. This is called the sausage model. Uh, of Fateyev, Onofri, and Zamolodikov. And there's also an so this guy is related to the XXX spin chain. This guy is related to the XXZ spin chain, and there's finally elliptic solutions, which are related to the XYZ spin chain, and give you some kind of some very strange looking metric. Okay, so yeah, so in some, you know, given chiral antichiral, we can always form an integral model when we have a solution of the classical Young-Baxter equation. It's not easy to see every integral model in this way. And one advantage of this point of view is that, like, without looking at it as chiral plus antichiral plus deformation, finding this metric is not easy. But on the other hand, if you just take this formula and you crank it through what we've done, you will find the metric in this old paper of Zamolodikov very easily. So it's a nice way to find certain quite subtle integral models that are not easy to find from other points of view. Okay, so I'll stop there. Yeah.
If you start with a theory which has a Lax operator that satisfies the Lax equation, how do you build a family of higher spin local charges?
Excellent question. Well, if you assume it's chiral plus antichiral plus deformation, then you can try to build higher spin local charges by starting with the chiral, so the chiral operators. I mean, before you deform it, the chiral operators can be of arbitrary spin and are conserved because they're in the kernel of del W bar. But when you deform, they're not conserved because the equation del W bar gets replaced by something involving currents. However, if you start with the chiral operator, which is invariant under G, say, for example, suppose I take this chiral operator. It's invariant under G. What you do is if you replace del by covariant derivative, del plus J bar, then you get a conserved operator. So at the classical level, the conserved operators, there are conserved operators built from any G invariant chiral antichiral. At the quantum level, it's extremely subtle because these operators may not be conserved anymore at the quantum level. Quantum anomalies to this. So the only way I would know how to check that such a theory has a conserved operator at the quantum level is just some kind of counting problem. You know, you say that the place the failure of this operator to be conserved is given by an operator of a certain spin. If there were no operators of that spin, then it must be conserved. It's quite difficult to find conserved operators at the quantum level.